Hello, and welcome to Season 3 of Medical Women Talking. I'm Jane Dacre, and in this season, I wanted to speak to more wonderful and inspiring medical women, including people who are early and mid-career. These women are all making a name for themselves in their respective fields. They're what I like to call rising stars and will be influencing all our futures.
Rahel Odonde. Rahel is a recent attendee of the Emerging Women Leaders course, which is one of the reasons why I started to do these podcasts. And she's also recently become a consultant in obstetrics and gynecology. And I'm talking to Rahel today because she was inspirational in her attendance on the course. And I hope that what she'll do is allow us to make a better connection with some younger listeners to the podcast, as she's only very recently become a consultant. So, Rahel, hello, and thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Rahel, can you start by just telling me about your career journey so far? So just an outline of how you got to where you are.
Okay, so I'm currently working at King's College Hospital, and before that, it's obviously a trainee in obstetrics and gynaecology in the Kent, Surrey, Sussex region. And throughout my time, worked in Surrey, Sussex, and then in Southwest London, where I decided to take up a special interest in safe abortion care, sexual health. And I also took a year out and completed a master's in global health at the Karolinska Institutet in Stockholm, as well as working with the WHO in Copenhagen. And that cemented an interest that I've had for quite a while, probably since I'd say I was a teenager, in global health as well. So that's a very brief summary of
So if we go even further back, when and why did you decide to become a doctor?
So I wanted to do six things growing up, and one of them was medicine.
Mm-hmm. What were the others?
Well, I wanted to be a vet. I wanted to be a singer and a dancer. And I can't remember the other two. My parents were laughing, thinking, oh, look, I had to pick one because time wouldn't allow me to do everything. And I knew I didn't want to do what my parents did. I didn't want to work in an office. And I wanted to do a job that allowed me to travel because I've grown up in many different countries. And I somehow settled on medicine, did a work experience placement during secondary school with a friend's mother who was a psychiatrist. And I entered medical school thinking I was going to be a child and adolescent psychiatrist.
Okay.
That was my aim. Obs and gynae was on my blacklist. I didn't want to touch that specialty at all. And that's what led me to apply to medical school.
Okay. So you say that you grew up in several different countries. How did that come about? Most people don't.
So, well, if I briefly summarize where I've lived. So I was born in the UK and then we moved to the Netherlands. We were there for about 7 years. We came back for a few months back to the UK and then moved to Malaysia for a few years, then came back to the UK. At this point, my father got a job in Saudi Arabia, but felt it wasn't the right place for my mother or myself and my brother, because my mum's got a very feminist head on her shoulders, so Saudi Arabia wasn't the right place. So we remained in the UK, then he returned to join us after a few months. And my parents decided my brother and I needed to finish our secondary education in one country. And so we stayed.
Okay, well, it seemed to have worked very well, because there are some people I would have thought who would have said, oh, I had a very disrupted education and therefore couldn't achieve. But obviously it worked. Something worked with you. So what did your parents do?
My dad.
What do they do? They're probably still doing it.
They're still doing it. My dad is an electrical engineer. And now he's a technical director advisor for a company in the States. my mother's career, she definitely has a portfolio career. She started off in international marketing, and then she became a lecturer, women's studies and economics and marketing. And then she became a project manager for a charity serving the non-priority homeless and the South Coast. And now she's a forensic psychotherapist.
Gosh, what an incredible role model for you.
Absolutely. Work ethic is incredible. So I definitely think I've got my work ethic from my parents.
It's interesting. All of the women that I talk to have the most incredible work ethic. We are incredibly conscientious, us lady doctors. Sometimes I think to our own detriment, but we are all conscientious. We all have a work ethic. So throughout your time at medical school and throughout your career, how's it been? Have you enjoyed it? What highs and lows? Tell me some highs and lows.
I definitely enjoyed my time at medical school. It was the best time. I've made lifelong friends. They're not really friends, they're family. I'm closer to them than my wider extended family. And I have a large, large family. We traveled together, we studied, we laughed, we played. It was amazing. And I think sometimes I meet people who think I've potentially wasted my best years by being at university for such a long course. And I would absolutely disagree. I could kick the can of certain types of responsibility down the road. Mm-hmm. I absolutely enjoyed my time at university. And I think where I went was the best choice. In terms of my career afterwards, there are many times I've been so proud in terms of the specialty I'm representing and the opportunities that I've had and had I'm not sure if confidence is the right word, but I'll use confidence. I had the confidence to go for. And at the same time, I would say this career has offered me some of the lowest points in my life as well. So I've seen both sides of the coin doing this. Mm-hmm.
So do you mind giving some examples of both? Some things that have really made your heart sing and some things that have made you despair, or one thing.
It might sound a little trite. The first really proud moment was graduating medical school.
Aww.
And I remember it was at the festival hall and going across the stage and looking up and seeing my parents, brother and grandmother in the box. And I really thought this moment was not for me, it was for them.
How lovely.
And that was, I think, the first time in my life I truly felt proud, because otherwise you're just going along, you do one thing, then the next, and you don't really take time to gather stock.
So becoming a doctor as a woman, particularly a woman of colour, is an incredible achievement, because actually for a number of reasons you're in a minority. So it is an amazing achievement. So quite rightly feeling proud, and your family feeling proud, I would say.
I suppose for me it's feeling proud that I am a doctor, but not necessarily because I'm a female doctor or I'm a woman of colour, because, and I think this is, so I'm African-British, my parents are African, I'm British by virtue of being born here and having spent the majority of my life here, but having travelled around and such an international family, I have never felt like a minority, and my parents were very good at letting me know that. So at 17, I travelled by myself to Kenya, because they really wanted me to be in a place where I was the majority, you know, and I wasn't minoritized. If you look at, I suppose, the proportion of people of color worldwide, we are the majority.
Yeah.
So it's something that I have never internalized. And it wasn't until I went to university and started mingling with more British people of color, because I suppose I grew up in very Caucasian areas in Britain, that I realized that people carried this sentiment, for want of a better word, inside, but I didn't. And that was I felt very different in comparison to other African Brits or Black Brits, mm-hmm. quote unquote, if you mm-hmm. want to put it that way. So that didn't really resonate with me. Maybe it resonated with other people, but it's not something that I felt. And my family, it's full of professionals. So my achievement wasn't necessarily extraordinary in comparison with my cousins.
Okay. Okay. So high flying family.
I say for me, it's my family.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. You're just their cousin.
Yes.
And they're just your cousins. Yeah. No, I completely get that. How about things that have been a bit more difficult along the way?
I suppose continuing along that thread of being minoritized, I would say in the UK or in England, shall I say, the only time that, or the very few times that I have definitely felt racism was at work.
Really?
So the first time was when I was in my second foundation year, and it was a patient, an Afro-Caribbean patient who was septic and needed blood taking. And, you know, very fortunate, you work in a multidisciplinary team, and the nurses would take the first set of bloods, that golden hour to do all the investigations, get on board the antibiotics. And I remember the nurse telling me that she would not take those bloods from a patient of that background. It was above her pay grade. And I was extremely shocked. And I mentioned this to someone who was my immediate senior, saying, I can't believe that she's told me this. And this person was a white English person. And they said, oh, this is really common. They say this for most patients of color that turn up.
Really? So a nurse was actually refusing to take part in the treatment of a patient who was black. Is that right?
Yes.
Good grief.
And so I thought, oh, this is not on. And someone else who is not their ethnicity is confirming this. I thought, you know what? This is why I'm doing medicine. I'm a social custodian, you know. So I filled out a datex because we're told there are no repercussions. Fill out a datex. So I did it that night after my shift. The next morning, I got an email from the head of nursing, basically attacking me, saying, how dare I say this about one of their nurses? This is basically unprofessional, etc. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, is my career over? You know, I was shaking. I was so terrified. And I tried to get in touch with the TPD. They ignored me. And it was around the time I was applying for Obs and Gynae. They refused to give me a reference, saying I wasn't a team player. I tried to contact the head of school. I was just being stonewalled. I spoke to my educational supervisor. They agreed. It was awful. But they didn't know how to help. And so I spoke to my indemnity organization. Mm-hmm. Because I was just worried. I was trying to gather all forms of protection, thinking, you know, what have I done? I've basically stoked a dragon.
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to an OEG consultant who told me, oh, don't worry, this doesn't happen in obstetrics and gynecology.
We're completely all right. Free. Okay.
Well, you know, you'll be looking forward to entering this profession. So, oh, phew, you know, this is going to be a unique experience. And it definitely highlighted to me, I should try not to stick my head above the parapet.
Did it?
This aimed at me. This was about a patient. I thought, look, I'm putting patients first. But it definitely was not the last time I experienced it. And the other times was directly aimed at me. But yeah, that
really?
Was the first.
Gosh, what? Direct criticism or?
It's just a build-up, a catalogue of things where you suddenly realise this is a toxic environment that I'm in, and it's toxic because people, for whatever reason, they're uncomfortable, or this is how they react or relate to people of colour, and I am that person of colour now. And so, an example, there was a complaint against an East African doctor who worked there 2 years before I did, completely different surname. But I was sat down and they went through the complaint with me, hoping that I would reflect on what was said about me, and then I had to point out this is not me.
Well, they got you confused with somebody else?
Yeah, with someone else who had worked there 2 years before me.
Very strange.
I was always singled out. When it came to operating, I wasn't really allowed to fully assist in comparison to my peers. I was just subject to, I suppose, derogatory comments, and not just about me, about patients. Yeah, it was just a whole barrage of things, and not getting support and being told I wouldn't get very far. So that was one place. And then in another hospital, I was informed that because I was a Black woman, I should never think of applying for a consultant job there, because I would never get a promotion. If I was a Black patient at that hospital, I should hope that I would be treated by a Black doctor instead of a white doctor. But, you know, I could handle being there because I appear to be a strong Black woman.
This all sounds really undermining. How did you cope with it all?
The first time I thought, is it me? No, it can't be them. It's probably me. I'm not presenting myself in the best way. There's a misunderstanding, some kind of miscommunication. Let me stay another year to see.
Yeah.
And then that second year I realized, no, it's not me. It's you.
So whoever said it wasn't like this in obstetrics and gynecology was talking through their hat, weren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then it happened again. As a senior registrar, I thought about leaving the profession. I thought, let me give it one more year in a different unit, if it is like that, because I don't want to be part of a profession that can't treat the trainees or their colleagues with respect and humanity. I don't want to be representing that profession. Mm-hmm. I would happily leave. But luckily, it was very different than the other unit. But it has definitely left me feeling a little bit disillusioned. And I think I was very grateful I had a year out, because it made me realize I'm not only a doctor, I'm more than a doctor, and I have transferable skills, and I'm not beholden to this profession.
So is that how you coped with it, by having a year out and then coming back again?
I don't think I did that explicitly at the time, but leaving for a year was like therapy. And I became rejuvenated, a more holistic practitioner. And I was able to look at my practice from different vantage points. And I think now that I'm a better clinician for my patients.
Yeah. And was this the WHO work?
Yes.
That you were doing? So, gosh, well, it sounds as if it was very enriching. So have you've come back, got back onto that ladder?
Mm-hmm.
And become a consultant?
Yes, I have.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations to you after all that to stick in, to hang on in. Can I just talk a little bit now about your personal life?
Mm-hmm.
So your marriage, you've got a baby?
Yes, 8 months.
How does all that work? Do you work full time?
I do work full time. How does it work? I've got a really supportive partner and supportive family on both sides. I was extremely worried once I found out I was pregnant and starting a new job, thinking they would think I lacked commitment and that I would maybe experience some negativity and it was going to negatively impact my career and career progression. I was so, so worried about that. So that was part of the reason why I didn't take a full year, but also because I'm all for equity, equality in the home and at the workplace. So my partner and I, after long discussions, decided to do shared parental leave. So we've almost split it equally.
Is he a doctor?
He is.
Right. So what? How soon did you go back? Because your baby's 8 months, I think you said earlier.
Yes, I went back at 7 months.
Gosh, wow. So that's tricky. In my day, you did go back early after maternity leave because otherwise you might not have got your job back. Mm. But it's hard, isn't it? All of that juggling.
Well, at the moment, he's home full time before he goes back to work. So I've been shielded from how difficult it could have been.
Yeah. Childcare is a nightmare. Not that I want to put you off, but it's really...
It is
tricky and expensive.
It's extremely expensive. We're relying on grandparents.
Are you? Yes. Well, that's what I do. I am the grandparent now. I think I wonder if I should set up a childcare facility to look after the children of all of the women that I talk to.
You probably should. And maybe, I suppose, keep the nurseries open, NHS hospitals.
Yes. Or have more of them. Have more of them.
Exactly.
So do you think essentially now you've done it, you've got through, you've got to where you are. Do you think being as successful as you are have influenced your personal life, your family in a good way or a bad way?
Are you talking about my immediate family or my wider family in terms of influence?
Whatever. It sounds as if your husband is incredibly supportive and your immediate family.
They really are.
Some women feel that various compromises have to be struck in order to continue with their careers.
I think you can't get to where you want to get to or do what you want to do without sacrifices. I've seen my parents sacrifice a lot. So I grew up knowing and thinking and expecting that I would need to sacrifice, probably more than my partner. But at the moment, the sacrifices on my part, I would say, have been really manageable and they don't feel that huge. But I'm sure in the future, there'll come a time where I think the tables will turn and the sacrifice will need to be greater on my part. And I'm fully prepared for that. It's life and it's a dance when you're in a relationship. Sometimes one person leads and sometimes another person leads.
Yeah.
It sort of equalizes it. But in terms of influence, I still feel that I'm the recipient of a lot of influence from my parents. I would not have got to where I was without my father and my mother just constantly telling me I can do whatever I want to do. I was given books about powerful women. My father was always sharing articles about Nobel laureates, for instance, Wangari Maathai. She was the first female professor in Kenya. So that was just always around me. And like I said, my family, there were certain expectations placed upon us because we saw our cousins, our aunts and uncles do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And my grandparents as well. So I'm not sure about whether I influence my family in any sort of way. I think they're definitely proud, but they still push me. And if I do influence them, I hope it's in the same way that they influence me, just to keep going. We have a lot of fun. We travel together. We rely on each other. And for me, that's home. They are my foundation and my roots. And so I feel that I can tackle anything, no matter where I am.
It sounds hugely helpful, and it's amazing how helpful or unhelpful people's families can be in the way they progress in their careers. But most of the women that I've been talking to in these podcasts, are very grateful to their family for supporting them in their journey. So do you have an idea about where you might want to be in the future? I mean, it's probably a bit early to tell. You've just got back to work from maternity leave. What's your plan? Do you have a plan?
Well, my plan at the moment is to get settled back into work. I get stuck into some sort of a routine. Although there is no such thing as a routine with a baby. It just keeps changing. As soon as you get used to one routine, on to the next. But that's part and parcel of the fun. And I really want to get my teeth into this job, make a difference. And I'm hoping that I'm working with people who are open to new ideas and benefiting the local community and the population.
Benefiting women, really.
Absolutely.
A real service to women, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And for me, a woman is the heart of the home. If you influence a mother positively, simple things like diet, nutrition, you'll impact the whole family and then the wider community. So that's my aim, really.
Fantastic. So actually, you've had an inspirational career so far, and you're only at the beginning of your consultant job. What advice would you give to younger women listening to the podcast who are coming through, who are thinking that they want to be like you or they want to have a career like yours?
I would say, don't be like me, be like yourself. Yes, I suppose I could be an inspiration, but do what interests you, be prepared to work hard, have your ear to the ground, and be open to have conversations with many different people and grab opportunities. If you see an open door, go through it. So yes, work hard, have fun, have 5-year plans, and be prepared to be somewhere where you didn't expect, but somewhere that you'll learn something from. That would be my advice.
That's fantastic advice. And I'm sure that people will heed it and will be inspired by your journey so far. And I think I'm going to be watching this space, Rahel, to see what you're going to do next. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Medical Women Talking with me, Jane Dacre. If you wish to hear more conversations with medical women, then check out the other seasons of this podcast series. And thank you for listening.